So I was working at a daycare at the time. I was 19. And parents were coming and picking up their kids, and like businesses were all shutting down and things. Yeah, they thought that this was like the war starting here and that we were going to be attacked.
I was 19. I was in college. Some people left the room and came back. One was crying. And then they said like, a plane had hit the, at the time it was like very early. So very early stages of what we knew. And yeah, it sounded like a prop plane was like throwing bombs or something. And I remember all of us trying to get on the internet and we couldn't. It was just so busy. So for you, your whole account was totally different from me and Steph's in so many ways, you could say.
How did you end up in New York?
Josh, where's the campsite?
It's coming up just ahead over there.
Are you scared of the dark?
Absolutely.
Yeah. But I'm with my friends. I'm okay.
Field of Geeks presents
The Super Unknown.
I'm Josh.
I'm Steph.
For most of us, we remember where we were when 9/11 happened. For our friend Stephanie, who has graciously joined us today, her experience was rather different since it all went down in her backyard, so to speak.
So I was working at a daycare at the time. I was 19. And parents were coming and picking up their kids, and like businesses were all shutting down and things. Yeah, they thought that this was like the war starting here and that we were going to be attacked.
I was 19. I was in college. Some people left the room and came back. One was crying. And then they said like, a plane had hit the... At the time, it was like very early. So very early stages of what we knew. And yeah, it sounded like a prop plane was like throwing bombs or something. And I remember all of us trying to get on the internet and we couldn't. It was just so busy. So for you, your whole account was totally different from me and Steph's in so many ways, you could say.
How did you end up in New York?
So I was born in Wyoming, moved to many states in my young childhood before finally settling in California for junior high and high school. And my mother married several times, a few of them in the military. So I was, kind of moving around a lot. And then once we got to California, she had married for the fourth time to a non-military guy. So we were kind of finally in one place for a bit. And then I ended up going to college in California as well, in Orange, California, Chapman University. I had grown up pretty low income and got this scholarship, academic scholarship to this university that I didn't realize at the time was like a pretty exclusive private university that cost a lot of money even back then. And I kind of took my scholarship for granted and didn't really use it very well. But, I was 19. I was
that happens.
Stupid.
Sure.
and there was a lot of different things I wanted to do. Journalism, politics. But I got sucked into the theater. And I was there actually for music, too. I was a singer. It was hard, like the music theory, and there was so much math involved, and then there was so much competition. There were girls that had been taking, professional operatic voice lessons for the last 15 years of their childhood, and then, like, even in California, I was not a true Californian. It was just...
You feel like an outsider in your own town.
It's always been that way. And then I got into the theater, got into, like, a musical, and made some friends, and those friends ended up in New York a year ahead of me and starting a theater company, and they were like, oh, you should come once you graduate and be in our theater company. And I didn't realize that, like, there's no money in it. I was just like, oh, sweet, I have this, like, inside, into the theater world, so I'm going to go move to New York. And I got there, and my two buddies, my friends from college, like, let me live with them in their apartment. They set me up with the temp agency they were working for. And at the time, like, you could get a good paying temp job, like, so easily in New York City. They were just handing out cash. All you needed was a college degree. Like, I joke, like, all you needed was a college degree in a heartbeat. They didn't care what they did in, they didn't care. You were a warm body and could get to work every day. You had a job. It was great. Another thing I took for granted at the time, because I didn't really dedicate myself to those jobs. I was there to be an actress, you know?
Sure.
So that's kind of how I ended up in New York, another place I didn't really belong, but but I loved it. I loved New York City. I was finally like, it's the melting pot of the world. There was a million other people that didn't belong there either, that
right.
were coming from everywhere. And I do feel sometimes though, like, people leave their small towns for big cities for a reason. Like,
mm-hmm.
they're looking for more, or they're looking for acceptance, or they're looking for just a bigger pond.
So you went there to act and sing. What were you doing, like, in the months prior to the attack?
So the temp agencies always would send us to the financial district, because that's where all the jobs were. The banks had so much money, and what was I doing in these places? Like, I worked at Seven World Trade, and I basically just answered a phone that would connect to other lines. Like, I was just transferring people all day to other phone lines. I wasn't even really answering anybody's questions. You know, it's just like random, super random office jobs. But they were always in the financial district. So I worked at Seven World Trade for a while.
Is that where the financial district kind of culminate with the whole World Trade campus, if you will? You know, all the buildings and so on.
Yeah, and it's kind of hard to describe it. Surrounded by other buildings. It's New York. I mean, it's super condensed, and you can throw a rock at the next building. So
it's tight.
I think there was a 1-6 World Trade as well. Well, obviously 1 and 2 were Tower 1, Tower 2. And 7 World Trade, which was just like a smaller, and you say small because the towers were so enormous. And I was basically like up on like the 30th floor. And we would go outside every day, my friend and I, and like have lunch at the bottom of the towers. You could lay down on a bench and look up, and you know, those parallel lines that made up the towers. It just went on forever. Like, there was never an end when you were looking up from the ground. Again, it was weird going there this past summer and not seeing them. It's so funny. You still look for them. Like, wait, there's which way's downtown? I can't see the
right.
And they did build, but it's just not the same. Like, the Freedom Towers.
So there was a subway underneath the Twin Towers? Is that right? Or throughout the city, obviously, but there was a stop underneath the Twin Towers, and there was, like, a mall down there? Is that what you said?
Yeah, it's the only way I can describe it. It's similar to that. But if you've been to New York City, like, there's several subway stops where underground there's stores. And, like, I specifically remember the post office because I used to need to go there. I, you know, back when we actually sent letters.
Right.
yeah. And there was, like, a sandwich shop down there and a pizza shop and a cleaners, like a dry cleaner in place. And it was a city within a city. I mean, there were thousands and thousands of people that worked there every day, and then thousands more tourists that would come and want to go up to the top of the roof at the top.
Did it ever come to your mind, like, wow, we're underneath these 500,000-ton buildings? Was it ever a scary thought, or is that just probably everyone got used to it because, you know, when you're in the subway system, you're underneath so much stuff?
You know, you get used to it, but also, yeah, it's all so solidly built.
Yes, of course.
It really doesn't occur to you. Like, as a worker there, you're just trying to get from point A to point B and get through the massive crowds every day. The reason, I think, though, it was just easier to pop down and get your lunch or grab your coffee on the way up. You know, like, there was
right.
just a few stores down there that I do remember thinking about, too. Like, God, they're gone also.
So how did your day start on 9/11?
I had gotten that job at the bookstore. I had left the stock exchange basically, like, couple of weeks, maybe 1 week before. I remember walking to work. It was a short 5-minute walk from my boyfriend's apartment. It was fabulous. It was so much better than that hour long one-way trip in the subways down to the stock exchange. And I was like, and it was a beautiful day, and I walked to work. I had worked in a bookstore before, so I was kind of familiar with shipping and receiving. So that's where it had me, in the basement again. I was like opening boxes of, you know, brand new books and taking them upstairs to be shelved. And I was shelving books, and the radio was on. I worked for this woman who loved NPR, as I do now today. She was playing it on the radio, like the bookstore speakers, basically. Okay. Whatever the New York version of NPR, I mean, there's IPR, there's PR, there's whatever state you're in, right? But I think NPR in New York is just NPR. And it was just like typical news. And then suddenly they started talking about the Twin Towers, and at first it was just background noise. And then they got the voices becoming more and more serious. I don't think it really occurred to us until after the second plane hit that mm-hmm. it was a commercial airline. Like, yeah. It was either being told on the radio by the newscasters that it probably just a propeller plane, or, you know, I'm sure it was an accident. And that's where I was that morning. And there were people that lived in the community that had, you know, firefighter husbands and husbands and wives, and there were people who worked down there. Such a ripple effect. So many people involved.
Just shut everything down too. Like, you couldn't get a hold of your loved ones if you had ones down there. And in fact, you got a call from your mom, right?
I don't even know how she got through. So, you know, back then we had landlines,
right?
Most of us. the cell phone was nothing at the time, and she didn't even know that I had switched jobs. My mother and I aren't on the best terms. We don't talk very often. So she thought I was still working down there. And, you know, I knew that it was serious when she called me, because I'm like, why is my mother calling me? And how did she get this number? So, yeah, I guess she had been frantically trying to reach me and called, like, an old college friend or my boyfriend's mother or something. And, like, And then even then when they told her, oh, she doesn't work down there anymore, she's uptown now, she's fine, I'm sure, she still had to hear my voice. My boss was like, your mother's on the phone. Like, okay. Nobody could make phone calls. Pretty soon after that, the lines got all tied up.
Before your mom called, you were still processing what was going on. I mean, you were downstairs, right, working, but you really couldn't, like, you were kind of shell-shocked in a way.
There was no television in the store. It was just the radio. The radio wasn't really giving us a good picture. People kept coming into the store and being like, did you hear? And, you know, just the same regulars that would always pop in. So it wasn't like that big of a deal. Nobody really knew the extent of it. And then, but once the second plane hit, and then the radio announcers were getting like more and more panicked, and then my mother called, and then I was like, we should close the store and mm-hmm. go home. And she was like, no. My boss said, no, I want to stay open in case people need somewhere to go. And I'm like, they're not going to come here.
Yeah, they're going to go home if they can.
Or some will be intrigued and go down there.
Oh, a lot of people did that, yeah. Or they tried to, but the security shut it down pretty quickly. I feel like by like noon, probably weren't going anywhere near it. But the emergency workers were all trying to get there. But yeah, so it wasn't until, so at lunch, I had my lunch break, and I walked back home to my boyfriend's apartment, and he had the news on, and his mother was there. And I was like, I'm not going back to work. I can't take my eyes off of this. I can't shelve books right now. Okay, this is crazy.
Right.
So I just called my boss, and I was like, I'm not coming back. Sorry. And I was like, fine if she was going to fire me. I was supposed to be down there. So I had just like escaped death. So I was fine with whatever was going to happen after that.
Sure.
She didn't fire me. I was fine.
Oh, yeah, like in your mind, if you think you know, you don't know what's going to happen. Like, why would you go back to work? I totally appreciate what you did. I would have done the same thing.
Right.
I remember being in the basement and looking around for places to hide. And I remember, like, going, I remember looking down the street outside, expecting to see something coming towards us. Like, I looked up in the sky and I looked down the street and I was just so afraid.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I've never been someone with anxiety or with, you know, irrational fears or anything like that. But that morning I was so scared. I don't know how people got the courage to go down there. Like, what, are you crazy? There's more.
Right.
Like, and I think that's why there were 500,000 people that wanted to get off the damn island, because, like, they're coming for us, and right. Who knows when this will end, and we could be next, and I want to get the hell out of here. So I don't know how people found the courage to go into it.
Yeah, I mean, we were never attacked like this, so, yeah, your mind would just race probably with all kinds of possibilities, you know. Because you said you pictured, foreign aircraft and things like that coming down and bombing and...
I really did. I really kind of was expecting it. Like,
mm-hmm.
tanks or like planes with, like, military paratroopers parachuting down with machine guns to just take over everything. Like, oh my God.
Yeah, like out of a movie.
Yeah.
It is finally happening in real life.
Yeah, and what the hell am I going to do about it?
Right. Well, I mean, that's the thing. We're all so innocent in a way. Like, we never really experienced something like this before. It was kind of... Things were more carefree, you know, before this happened, I think. And it really... I think we all thought we were safe, I guess. And I think... I don't really think that's ever gone away since this happened. That day, you know, so many things changed, you know, and it's
20 years later, and it still feels like
right.
It could
happen. We're still going through the effects, and it's just incredible how that, you know, people before me knew where they were when JFK was assassinated and Martin Luther King, but this was basically our moment. We would always, I think, everyone had that burnt into them, like where they were when that happened. You could have been down there. Are you predestined, I guess, to be saved? Or, you know, not to say, you know, who knows how...
Is there a reason that you left that job 2 weeks before? Like, is there something higher that made that happen?
There's people who have stories that, like, they were supposed to be on the planes. Or
right.
That they were supposed to be at a meeting in the towers that day and they didn't go. Or I was talking to my kids last night, tucking them in, and we were talking about it, and they said, you know, Mom, I can't believe you're almost there. And I said, you know, if I had been there, you guys probably never would have been born.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even if I had survived, I'm sure my life would not have unfolded the way it did after. The whole predestined thing, you know, sometimes bothers me. Like, if I was meant to live, then... That means that all of those other people are meant to die, and I don't love to think about
that's
it like that.
That's the dark side of that thought process.
Unless you have, like, a really strong belief in the afterlife and that
right.
they had
a bigger
role to play elsewhere. Maybe, but then there's the people they left behind, too. Like, there were children who lost their parents. And
yes. Yes.
I don't know. Did you know? I didn't even know this. The guy on Saturday Night Live, it's so funny.
Pete Davidson?
The young... Yeah, his father was in the towers.
Yeah.
He was a firefighter.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. It affected him. I mean, he still has mental issues from that time. And yeah, because it was a lot to process. I think he was 8 when his dad died. Yeah, I think their mom tried to calm him and got them a pool, I guess, from the funds or something. Just to try and cheer him up. When you were in the bookstore when this happened, did you at all feel like, was there a shockwave at all or anything when things went down? Any commotion outside?
No.
No.
I was an hour away though. Or
I mean by train. I was way up way uptown.
Yeah, uptown. Of course.
The reason that the train takes an hour is because it stops all the every. Stops. Yeah.
So walk. How far was it? How far, like if you were walking from the bookstore there, how far would it have been? Like time.
Oh, walking would still probably take you close to an hour. I mean, it's just from the top of the island to the bottom of the island. You could see the smoke from far away if you were looking in the right direction, but it wasn't significant from there. There was the aftermath and the immediate years after. It was still very raw. But then you kind of like, I don't want to say forgot about it, but you had to move on. I lived in New York for 7 years after that, and it was not a part of my daily life to like, you know, go down there and check it out or anything.
What were your thoughts and feelings and things in the days after the attack? You know, I know a lot of Americans were super angry and about it and whatnot, but what were your thoughts?
Well, I know that for us in New York, we wanted to feel safe, and we wanted the people who did it to be caught. It was such a weird concept that it wasn't another country, that it was just these random people, like hell, like, you know, because I really fully expected that it was like either some Middle Eastern country or Russia or China or, you know, North Korea, like, okay, now we're going to go to war and we're going to bomb the fuck out of those people. And then, you know, you messed with the wrong country. Like, okay, you got us, but now you're going to die.
Right. I mean, yeah, it was the last time we were truly united as a country, you know. I don't know if that will ever happen again, us to be, you know, we were pretty much all like, yeah, let's go. Let's go. This is, you know, because it hurt, you know, even though, you know, Steph and I were very far removed from it, but still it was... You know, they shut down everything around us here, pretty much. And, yeah, my parents didn't want me going anywhere. Because there was kind of those threats, like, well, you know, these terrorists could bomb malls or wherever, theaters, things like that.
I don't know. I think we felt differently. We were like, okay, they're not going to. Why would they come to Iowa? In the middle of the U.S., like, we're just a little farm country. Like,
but the
state,
mind,
you know?
The mind lingers, right? The mind's like, hey... Because it was advised by our government to stay at home, and until until you know everything suffered, they're like, go out and buy stuff. You know.
I just remember I had a good friend, and her dad flipped out, and he had a brand new truck at the time, and he stenciled like, you know, the whole never forget, and this is what happened, and we're gonna come after you, and like the U.S. is like gonna kill you, and all this stuff. Like, he put it on the back window of his truck, like, he was so pissed about this whole thing. So,
right,
so there was like differences of opinions there, you know. But yeah, I think
there was anger, there was fear, but I mean, New Yorkers, I mean, that was a, you know, traditionally Democratic, very liberal, very blue. I found it was like crazy. My boyfriend's mother at the time was debating, I think an election came up that November in New York, and Giuliani was up for election. And I remember her like struggling with this choice, like, I really don't want to vote for a Republican, but maybe we need to in this time to be like, you know, more of that like war hawk kind of person.
Right.
Yeah.
We were all looking for heroes during this time. Obviously, we had the firemen and the policemen, but even our president, who I didn't vote for, but I, you know, I looked up to him at that time, especially after that great speech, you know. And then Giuliani was quoted, or, you know, he was America's mayor, right? And so I think a lot of us were on board of electing him.
Isn't that so weird, right? Looking at him when you see him now, you're,
oh
my God.
Yeah. The legacy is totally gone.
Part of that was, you know, the power corrupted him, I think. There was a time that Giuliani was a good, well, I didn't know him personally.
Right. Like, no, but he's...
Yeah, he seemed...
Sane.
He
seems
to
sane.
Rise to the occasion.
Yeah.
Yeah, he did help New York kind of feel more secure.
Right.
I guess I can give him that.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean, it caused a lot of people to question how they felt about things. I remember how frustrating it was that we couldn't get them, that they were going to go with it, and that it wasn't a country that we could just hold accountable. But yeah, also, I mean, the fear lingered because of that. So it was anger, it was fear, it was sadness. There was a lot of people walking around still with, like, flyers looking for their family members. It was covered in pictures and flyers, and that went on for months.
That day, you were in the apartment watching all this unfold on TV. And so...
After I left my job.
Right, yeah, right. When the towers fell, I know you were far away, but was there any feeling of that impact? And of course, what was racing through your minds? Was it just so hard to believe it was going to go that route? Them being hit alone, but then them coming down.
I mean, it was disbelief. It was complete shock. And then the Pentagon and the other plane that went down, we know now, that was meant for either the White House or the Capitol. And just, you know, I couldn't imagine going to sleep that night. I went to my theater friend's apartment. I left my boyfriend's apartment, went to go see my theater friends because, you know, we were all each other and the phones were not reliable or not working. We didn't, so we all kind of met at my friend's house, at my friend's apartment. He lived Upper West Side. And we kind of said, like, I don't know if it was that night or the next day. I think it was the next day. We said, let's go down there and, you know, it's right there. It's, you know, we could take the subway and then just walk around and see, like, this for ourselves.
Sure.
Not as, like, it wasn't like watching a train wreck or anything, but just, like, you couldn't understand that what was happening on TV was really that. I feel like a lot of us wanted to see it for ourselves, and I can't explain.
Because you can turn the TV off and it's gone, there. But it's really happening, and so, yeah, it makes...
It's right down there.
Yeah. Yeah,
so we did go. We didn't have masks or anything. We didn't have... We're just a bunch of 20-something kids.
Like, sure.
Get off the subway, and we start walking towards the wreckage, blocks away, because all the subways close to it were, of course, closed. And we started seeing, you know, street barricades, and we were basically kind of not allowed to get very close. And there were, I remember, military guys in full military gear with gas masks and with huge machine guns standing on street corners. You would never have seen that before.
Wow.
How terrifying. Like,
yeah,
so terrifying.
But, you know, also, being a 20-something, I was a little bit, like... In those days, kind of in the mindset of, like, challenging authority and not having, like,
yeah,
you know, like, oh, let's sneak through. Like, it was like, oh, we can't go that way because the military's there. Not, oh, they're there because this is a dangerous place to be and maybe
right.
we shouldn't be there.
right.
You know, and that occurred to me later in life. Like, what the hell were we thinking? Also, the fact that we're walking around with all of this, like, dust in the air, and we didn't have any protection for our lungs, and, like, if they're wearing a gas mask, maybe we shouldn't be here. You know, so it was that kind of thing. At the time, it was like, oh, we can't go down that street because there's a army guy. Let's go down.
Right. Did the air feel thick of that? Could you smell it, or is it kind of disguised?
Yeah, like, what was that like? Was there, like, a scent, was it just dust?
Oh, my God. It was... There is definitely the smell of burned things in the air, and there was... The floor, everything was covered in dust. Everything had a thick film. Not a thin, like, thick ashes. Like, white... everywhere, and there were papers everywhere. I picked one of them up. I saved it for a long time. It was, I don't know where it is anymore, but it was like a charred office paper, like somebody's work that day. And we're walking around, and then we realize these are probably the ashes of people.
Yeah,
too,
could be, sure.
Papers. But it's so weird for, like, for buildings of that magnitude and everything in them, desks,
yeah.
filing cabinets, you know, bathrooms, everything to be just completely demolished and crushed into ash.
Right.
Like that. It was just hard to believe that that's what we were looking at. And then, you know, we couldn't get very close. We didn't even, like, get close enough to see the actual wreckage. I think we were able to, like, peek down a corridor and see some of the top of it. And then we just kind of felt like it hit us at a certain point, like, we really shouldn't be here, and we're going to go now.
Right.
Yeah. I don't know what we were expecting, but, like, I think part of it as theater people was, like, to face the thing in real life and, mm-hmm. and have this emotional kind of experience and be able to say, yeah, I was there. I saw it in person. And,
sure.
And it was as bad as it looks on TV. It was worse, or whatever we were looking for was more just like, we're kind of treading on sacred ground here. I mean, we belong here. We shouldn't be here kind of feeling.
Right.
So
right.
Not that anybody ever told us we couldn't be there. And there were people milling about in general. There were people looking for their loved ones. It wasn't like we were the only ones there, but
sure.
And this was still, like I said, like 10 blocks away. But it did feel pretty empty and quiet still.
Trade Towers are right by where you worked in 7. And then when 7 just collapses, you must have been...
Could have been in that building.
Yeah, and I had worked at the Stock Exchange more recently, but the 7 World Trade Building, I remember, like, the elevator, the corridors, the cubicles, the desk where I sat, the window that I looked out of, where my friend worked, his cubicle... I can picture those things. I can't picture the people that I worked with because I was a temp and I didn't really know anybody. And usually I was just a kid trying to get away with something. I was just trying not to get caught, not knowing like anything about the job I was doing. So I was like,
right.
Avoiding knowing people in that sense. And but you know, there were so many of them, and I don't know. It's hard. But then, and then the Stock Exchange, I remember their faces more clearly. Not their names.
Sure.
I don't know. 20 years goes by, I don't remember names anymore.
Oh, yeah,
but
sure.
But I remember them and wonder to this day, like, if they made it okay. And
of course.
Did your friend your friend is the one that you still speak with sometimes on Facebook or see on Facebook. Is that the one that you worked with at 7?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Rob and I went to college together, and then we ended up in the same building for when I first moved to New York. He kind of helped me
get
set up with the temple, and then they kind of assigned me to his building because that's where like all the jobs were.
Okay. So he's alive. And
yeah, and again, like, I need to reach out to him and be like, so were you still there? Because I don't remember him telling me about it.
Sure.
The day after we went and walked down there.
Yeah.
I just, you know, it's weird because you're assuming a lot that we all kind of were there. So it's like, okay, you're fine. Not, oh, you're fine, but where were you? You know,
right.
Because we weren't thinking in the past yet. We weren't like, where were you when? Like, it just freaking happened.
Right.
Yeah.
And it was more kind of in the moment, like, oh, you're okay. Okay, let's meet at Randy's and let's go down there and see if we, you know, see anything and what and if this is real, and then even ever talk about it, really, like, nobody asked me where I was either.
Right. I mean, we were probably just all focused on what the event itself.
We had marked ourselves safe, and then we moved on. It was just
right,
you know.
Right, which is what you would do. Yeah.
So you said you lived in New York for 7 more years. Did you just do random things then, or did you ever work in the financial area again?
No. Even before 9/11, security was like, I think in hindsight, you know, we all realized that, like, they weren't going to get in any other way. Like, yeah. I had to go through so many metal detectors and guards, and I had to show passes to get into these places. And then after 9/11, you couldn't even go down the same block that the Stock Exchange was on. You couldn't get anywhere near it. And also, the whole industry was not, you know, flush with cash anymore. It wasn't mm-hmm. like the temp jobs were not in that sector anymore. And I wonder how much of that was that, or how much of it was just we don't trust any random person now. We're gonna start being more careful.
Sure.
But yeah, so I stayed at the bookstore for like 2 years. And
wow.
then I went and got a job in like Midtown, in an office building in Midtown, but it was in marketing, not finance. But really, I mean, I was in New York for the next 7 years, still trying to make it as an actress and a singer. and kind of getting older and making some poor life choices and realizing that maybe this isn't going to work out.
Right.
So, and it was hard to leave. Once you kind of figure New York City out and you get comfortable with it, it's hard to leave because you can't imagine living anywhere else. I would need a car and I would need a real job. I can't just go out and get a waitressing job like that. Yeah, it's a great place to spend your 20s. I made a lot of great friends. I have a lot of really great experiences. And, you know, I did get a lot closer in the music industry than I would have if I had stayed in California, I think. But
sure.
you meet so many talented people who are doing the same thing you're doing. In hindsight, it wasn't the pursuit of becoming a rich and famous entertainer was second to the journey of like all the people I met and the amazing art that I got to witness.
Oh, sure, the experience had to be fantastic. Mm-hmm. Aside from obviously 9/11, but still an experience.
And then it's hard to explain it, but like you're on the subway with like every walk of life.
Yeah.
Everybody, it's the great equalizer. Like you've got this guy in the suit and tie, and you've got the guy in the turban, and you've got the, you know, the woman with the kids in it, and it's just everybody is on one, you know, level for at least a little bit.
Right.
And you're all in this together. And it's funny to me that outside of New York, people were attacking Muslims and stuff because there was absolutely none of that. I mean, not that I really saw or heard of. There was no like mistaking someone in a turban with, you know, the devil or whatever was going elsewhere. It was not happening. In one place where we were attacked, it was not like, because we were New Yorkers and we knew that that wasn't
right.
Yeah.
Consensus
because
was
of the way somebody looks doesn't mean anything. Like, what? Now what are they doing? It's just crazy. It was crazy to us the way the rest of the country reacted.
Right.
And it kind of, you had this solidarity with your fellow New Yorkers that you didn't want to leave them.
Yeah.
And I didn't know, so I didn't know what I would have done otherwise. And I later met Paul in like 2003, and we were together like 5 years on being musicians. And then it wasn't until we got pregnant that we ever considered leaving New York City.
Sure.
It was what we knew, and there was a lot we loved about it, but we couldn't imagine raising a kid there. Maybe we could have, but
right.
At the time it would have been so expensive. We were already kind of barely getting by, and he decided to go back to school and get his master's so he could get a better job so that he could provide, and so we weren't going to stay there anyway, but...
Sure.
And in hindsight, it is ironic to me that we didn't leave, that I didn't immediately leave after 9/11.
Right.
What the hell?
Did a lot of people you knew there, did they end up leaving after 9/11, or did they stick it out kind of like you did?
No, there was no great exodus. There was no, if anything, it was almost like a badge of courage.
Right. It was pride. Pride, a lot of pride. Yeah, of course. Us being from outside of New York, New Yorkers are known to have kind of an attitude, I guess you could say. Did you feel that was like a true thing? And after this event happened, did you feel like things were better if that was true?
Like, screw you, I'm not leaving. You're not going to scare me out of my town.
Right. Or just, you know, the mindset, like so many people are in that city, right? Mm-hmm. And they all walk and experience things and I guess maybe get blunt towards each other, you could say. But that's just... you know, other people's perspectives, but what was yours?
Yeah. When I first moved there, I definitely felt like people were being really blunt, like you said, mm-hmm. really rude and just crass and just to your face, who gives a shit what you think, kind of the person. But then you live there long enough and you start to feel the same way because it's like... yeah. You know, get out of the way. What are you doing? Like,
right.
There's a sidewalk for walking, and if you want to pull over and look at the sky, like, do that, but, like, don't just stop in the middle of the walkway.
Right.
So, workers put up with a lot, and that's why I think they have that kind of chip on their shoulder a little bit. And after 9/11, no. I mean, it was so humanizing, and there was a lot of people walking around really raw and really hurt. And even when we went back this summer, we stayed in New Jersey. We stayed right across the street from the towers. Wow. And there is a memorial there. And, you know, New Yorkers just recently also survived a pandemic where they were hit pretty hard. And there was a bit of an exodus after that because it's such close quarters. And I think a lot of people just didn't feel
right,
like they were going to escape the virus if they stayed there.
Sure.
But they're all coming back. It's really funny. My friend, Randy, he still lives there, and his boyfriend have an apartment there. They were about to buy when the pandemic came along, and they decided to rent instead. But they said a lot of people left, and now they're all coming back. They all went to, like, the sticks, you know, the burbs of everywhere, like Connecticut, Pennsylvania, Jersey, upstate New York, and now they're all kind of trickling back, because you'll never find that lifestyle anywhere else.
Right.
Freedom of just walking out your door and not needing a car and not needing anything.
It's all there.
But yourself.
Right.
It's awesome. It's awesome. And nobody's judging you, and everybody is accepted. And
that has to be amazing.
It's like everybody's accepted, but everyone's minding their own business too.
Right. There's just probably no time, right? Everyone's going somewhere, right? So there's probably no time to really stop and reflect or be polite. You could say, you know, it's like, hey, encountered.
Going on. It's not, you know. I think it's funny because that's what people think of California. It's like, oh, everybody's like, you know, hippies and flower children, and they're all singing songs and hugging trees. And it's definitely not. In New York, like, there's no surprise. There's no, like, ew, what's that? Or who are you? Or why are you like that?
Right.
It's like, you don't even blink an eye at anything you see, even a naked cowboy in Times Square. I feel like that's why it's so sadly ironic that they hit New York. For, like, months afterwards, it was all blocked off, and it was just a giant demolition site. I forget how many years to just take it all away.
Yeah.
It took a long time to clear it off.
Did you have a thought, like, were you hoping, like, they should just redo the buildings, make them just like they were?
Most of us wanted them to just leave it. Yeah. I couldn't do that.
Right.
It was extremely dangerous, and it was going to rot and deteriorate further, and it was not healthy for the city to just have this giant gash. But a lot of us felt like, haven't we learned anything from this? You're just going to put the same freaking thing right on top of... No, like, not only the people who died, but the reason it was hit in the first place is we're basically flaunting, putting these big things up in the sky and asking for it. And it was kind of like this really toxic mentality of, I guess, how a woman feels like, oh, well, you shouldn't have worn that dress. That's why you got raped. Like, we shouldn't put another building up because we're going to get hit again. We didn't want to get hit again.
It's like you're giving people a target, like a giant target. Like, here, just, we're right here. Yeah. Come get us. So you've been to the memorial.
Yeah, just this summer.
Oh, okay.
And we were there with my friend Randy and his husband Scott. And they were so cute. His husband is a teacher, and he set up this kind of scavenger hunt of the city for the kids.
Oh, that's cool.
So we were going all over the city looking for these iconic landmarks and things that, you know, they could check off their list. And one of them was a tree at the World Trade Center. The only tree to survive.
Wow.
In, like, a 5-block radius or whatever. It was one of the only trees to survive from before.
It's still there.
And they had, like, a fence around it and a plaque, and they had to move it off the site and replant it somewhere else for a few years and then bring it back.
Oh, wow. So is that part of, like, the memorial now then, or is it just, like, it's separate?
Yeah, there's a plaque next to it. And they planted a bunch of other trees, but you can tell that one, it's bigger, it's older. you get up to it and there's a fence around it and there's a plaque and you read about it and you're like, oh my God.
How was the attitude of people around you?
At the memorial, there was a lot of tourists. There was a lot of solemn, like, searching for names because there's, you know, the names of the victims on the side.
Yep.
The like, fountains and stuff. There was more of a local reverence in New Jersey. There's a lot more of the people who actually worked there lived in New Jersey. And
wow.
We take the ferry every day to work. And there were two places. When we went to the Statue of Liberty from the New Jersey side, the ferry we caught, there was a memorial of these two giant, like, pillars, right, that they placed right where the towers would have been if you were looking in that direction.
Oh, wow.
And there's also, right across the hotel we were staying at in Jersey City, is a statue that, so apparently the story is that the rescue workers had been digging for, like, days looking for, you know, survivors, hoping for survivors, and they thought that they found another dead body, and they were pulling it out of the wreckage, and it was, like, super stiff, and then they realized it's not a dead body, it's a statue.
Oh.
Wow. It was a bronze statue that had been, like, part of the, like, corporate art around the, you know, area. You know, like, when you walk through any city, like, you see those, like, bronze statues of, like, mm-hmm. somebody sitting and thinking or somebody
sure.
Pointing or looking out. And it was just, it was a statue of a man sitting and kind of contemplating. The rescue workers were so happy that it wasn't a body
mm-hmm.
that
oh, I bet.
For days afterwards, they, like, set it up in their little workspace and were bringing things to it, like flowers and...
Oh, wow.
They put their hat, like, there's an FDNY hat on it. And
sure.
I'll send you the picture that I took of it. So then the original artist was found, and he was so moved by all of the stuff that these workers were leaving on the statue that he decided to recast it exactly with all of that stuff on him.
Whoa.
And then that... is now sitting in Jersey City right across the water from the towers and then
wow.
next to, like, a piece of the building. Yeah, and it's, like...
That is so
cool. I don't
know.
It's just so crazy. So crazy to think, like, that somebody would be happy to find a statue and not a dead body.
Right.
But they're finding so many deceased that I'm sure that was, like, such a relief.
I feel like the Jersey side, you get more of the local kind of remembrance, and then at the World Trade Center itself, it's a lot of tourists, a lot of people coming to pay their respects, but not necessarily those who lived through it.
Sure.
Do you think your life is any different now because of the events, or do you think it's just everything happened how it was supposed to happen?
Yeah, and this is where I struggle because I'm like, who am I to claim anything? Like, I...
Right.
First of all, was not a real New Yorker. Second of all, was just a temp worker. Third, I wasn't even there the day of. I was uptown.
Mm-hmm.
Fourth, like, I didn't know anybody who died there. So who am I to have any opinion or any feelings about it? I kept having this, like, feeling of being an imposter. And then I read a little bit about survivor's guilt, and
mm-hmm.
that's kind of a common theme with survivor's guilt. Anytime 9/11 comes up, everybody wants to tell their story and everybody wants to
right.
share where they were that day. Most of the time, it's not somebody who lived through it,
right.
you know, but we all still have that survivor's guilt and that kind of PTSD a little bit, that traumatic memory that we're still processing. Every time the subject comes up, we're, you know, having a little mini therapy session with whoever we're standing next to.
Right.
So yeah, it definitely changed me in that sense. And I had a few traumatic events before that, so it wasn't like it was new to me. I really do feel like there's been moments where I've narrowly escaped death, and I don't understand why, because I'm not a very religious person. I don't think there's a guy with a beard in the clouds, like,
mm-hmm.
granting special privileges to me because I'm white or because I live in America or because, you know, like,
sure.
I'm not,
mm-hmm.
I'm clear-eyed about that. I
mm-hmm.
don't, at the same time, think that everything is just random. I do believe there's maybe some sense to the universe and maybe some positive negative balancing going on. So it's bigger than me and I don't need to understand it, but I do think maybe there's more to it than just chance.
Sure.
And honestly, like, I was a completely different person.
Even though you weren't at the towers or whatever, but you, I mean, you could have been, and you were close by, and, like, you did witness it and see other people's lives change. I mean, you didn't know anybody that died, but you still kind of witnessed everything that was going on with New York at that time. I would think that that would change anybody a little bit, you know? Like, maybe, oh, maybe, shit, I should change how I'm... how I'm acting, or maybe I should get a different job and, like, you know, like, grow up a little. Like, that's how I would feel, you know, if I was in that situation. I'm not saying that that's what you felt.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, like, yeah, you know, like, different things happen and you're like,
you
oh,
would
crap.
Think it was almost too, though, like, there was a little bit of self-destruction going on. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, we became more conservative politically, and we became more jaded, and we became more I was not making better choices after that. I spent the next 7 years doing the dumbest things. you know, drinking too much, you know, doing maybe some self-medication that I wasn't aware of. And I think that the not just my individual knee-jerk reaction, but the country as a whole and our government, but, like, the human psyche in general was kind of not handling it well.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah.
We were not coping in a very healthy way, I would say. And mm-hmm. then, so there was a delayed reaction for that book, what you're describing, Stephanie, of, like, oh, that would have, like, made me straighten up and fly right. Well, that didn't happen for another, like, 10 years.
Yeah.
But then sure. when it did, it became, like, finally we can look back and we can reflect a little bit without the raw pain or the incredible fear.
Yeah.
Of course.
And that was after how many years of Afghanistan and chasing bin Laden and the Iraq War? My brother enlisted and went to freaking Middle East and fought.
Oh, wow.
And had a bomb go off near him and lost hearing in one ear and has PTSD to this day. And
wow.
He's a vet that collects, you know, medical benefits because of what he went through, because he, at the time, was his reaction was, well, I'm going to go join the fight. And so many people did, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then they're now looking at it going, was that all for nothing? Like 20 years of providing a little bit of stability for the Afghan people, but it really was not in any way going to fix 9/11 or get us our vengeance or our, you know, whatever it was that we initially went after them for was not, did not occur. You ask the Afghan people, I say absolutely. Like, there was a whole generation of kids that got to experience life without Afghan. And if that was your kid, of course it's worth it.
Mm-hmm.
And thank you for your service. And, you know, my brother doesn't feel regret. I think as a government, we really got to keep this in mind for next time, because they're not going to be maybe an exact incident, but there's always going to be something, and we've got to learn how to use logic and reason and process what's going on without having these reactions that are so.
Don't let anger lead the way. Pretty much plan an attack, and
I hope that this was, like, something that somebody even wants to listen to.
Yeah, I think it's a good thing, Steph. I'm really, I thank you for coming on, because I find it very interesting.
Oh, for sure.
I know you don't feel like you were there in the towers or whatnot, but you were still a New Yorker at the time, and I feel like that is something that us from the outside cannot even understand. So reading your story, I felt like I was reading a book about your life there at the time, and it was interesting. I liked it.
I did want to talk just really quickly about the little boy that I taught.
Yeah.
Sure.
just because, like, and maybe a good note to end on is you never know what someone else is going through. A few months after I took a part-time job working at the Bronx Community Center uptown, and I was just teaching, like, 6 to 12-year-old kids hip-hop dance. I remember doing, like, a song to dance to a J-Lo song, and the kids loved it, and it was fun. It was a fun thing to do on the weekends. I made a little extra money, and I felt like I was still kind of in the entertainment world in some sense. But yeah, I had this kid that was like kind of annoying, and he was always clinging to me, and he would never listen. He had the biggest smile on his face every time he saw me, but he, you know, he wouldn't stay in his spot, and he didn't do the dance moves, and he was just like, every 5 seconds coming up and hugging me or grabbing my leg or holding my hand. And at first it was cute, and then it was just like, what the hell? And one day I got pretty stern with him, and I was like, you need to go back to your spot and do the dance. You need to stop. And I was like, you know, put on my mom voice, later would become my mom voice. And he got really upset. He burst into tears. He ran out of the room, and after class, like, his aunts were outside, and they were like, you know, we're so sorry. It's just that you remind him of his mother, and she passed. She was in the towers.
Oh, wow.
And I felt so guilty, and I felt so terrible. And I was like, well, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. Let me talk to him. And he didn't want to talk to me. And he didn't want to ever go back, and I never saw him again, and I felt so bad. You know, that kid had to grow up without his mom, and she looked, I guess, a little bit like me, and if I had known, I could have just shown him a little kindness. And we don't know, right? So people are walking around. You don't know what they're going through, and we should all have a little more compassion for each other, a little more grace.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Too bad you don't have a way to, like, find out who that little boy was now, you know? Like, especially as a mom now. And, like, obviously I can see your face, so I can see how it affects you even still to this day. Like, I feel like crying right now just talking to you and watching you, because, like, that's, you know, what if that was your kid and you...
Yeah.
There's so many of those children just like that that lost their parents that day.
Right.
Yeah. You know?
And those who lost parents fighting, you know, overseas.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's it does humanize you, that's for sure. And it should humanize you. And I want to thank you for sharing your story with us today, and really appreciate it. And
it's not my story. It's his story. It's their story. But yes,
right.
For those of us, we can talk about it without bursting into tears. Like,
right. Of course.
It's an important story. Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah.
Hug your kids and enjoy the beautiful day.
Be thankful. Yes. Be thankful.
Well, give your kids hugs for us too.